Hello, everybody. Welcome to It Was Tuesday with your host, James Chen, a.k.a. Jay Chenzor, where I try to talk about things in a more nuanced fashion because Twitter sucks. But let's go ahead and talk about another topic that's been coming up here. A little kind of, I feel like a little misinterpreted, but that's why Twitter sucks. There was a video clip of Ryan Hart on Chris Tatarian's podcast talking about the difference between old, I mean, he was talking about old games and new games, but old players versus new players, and it kind of devolved into a lot of people talking about, oh, it's that same conversation again. Can new players be old players? And and like, man, do we really got to talk about this again? Do we really got to talk about this again? Look, I can say, as an actual old school player here, okay, I have seen the Tomos. I have seen the Valles and the Justin Wongs and the Mike Watsons and, you know, a lot of the Nanukis and the Sakos, etc., etc., etc. I can tell you that given all of the same resources that we have today, that these players would be just as good as all of the new school players today. In fact, they would probably blow up the new school players a bunch of times. A bunch of times. But at the same time, a lot of the new school players are going to blow up a lot of the old school players a bunch of times. A bunch of times. I know a lot of people like to compare this to like modern sports, you know, like, oh, you know, the basketball players or the hockey players from the 60s just aren't as athletic. You know, there's the stupid Michael Jordan played against plumbers, bullshit stuff that people talk about out there and such. But, you know, it's not fair to compare classic players to modern players without thinking about what it would be like if they had the same physical sciences that we had, the same facilities, the same medicines, the same, you know, treatments, the same knowledge that we have today. Of course, players back then aren't going to be as strong because they just didn't have access to these things. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I was talking about with, SQ on her stream, you know, was how much training mode has made everybody a stronger player today, right? Just having these kind of tools is so powerful. If Tomo was playing today, he'd be just as strong. He wouldn't necessarily dominate everybody like he did. It would be a very, very, you know, back and forth because a lot of people are very, very, very good. Oh, you're right. We can't compare Michael Jordan to LeBron James because LeBron James is like not even really number two or one because clearly it's MJ and then Kobe. So, you know, that's clearly GOAT and GOAT number two. So, but let's see. Competition is currently harder, higher level because FGC has plus members. And games are easier to learn via content. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And again, if we had that same kind of access, and, you know, we just talked about the games are easier, via content, for sure. But, you know, again, if guys like Tomo and Watson lived in this era, they'd be doing just fine. Now, again, it's always nice to root for the era that you're from. So, you know, I'm always going to be like, yeah, of course Tomo would be able to beat everybody today. And everyone's like, come on, James, we're so good now. There's a look at Justin, look at Sako, you know, they're old. Look at Daigo, he's washed up now, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, it's just, your definition of washed up is very different than my definition of washed up, okay? I'm washed up. I used to be a strong player. I'm washed up now, okay? There's nothing washed up about someone like Daigo or Sako or Justin Wong, etc., etc. But I like to talk about this because people don't realize how different it was back then when we played fighting games. I know I've mentioned this before on the stream, and I know people have probably heard this before from me, so I apologize if this is a little repetitive. But the thing about it really comes down to, a long time ago, the mentality was very, very different. We as players knew we could never dedicate all of our time to fighting games. That was just not an option. Because as much as we loved fighting games, as much as we loved playing them, as much pride as we had, there was no future in it. We often talked about fighting games as something that we knew we would give up eventually. Every time we started getting to around 20s and 30s, we knew the retirement was coming, that we would stop playing, that it was time to start a family, get a job, and do something real with our lives. With that in the back of your head, you could never dedicate your entire faculties to playing fighting games. And do you know how much having that in the back of your head hinders your growth in fighting games? We all talked about it all the time. I'm going to retire from fighting games and become a game programmer. That's how you shifted it, right? A lot of FGC people tried to become game designers. I know a bunch of them that went to Paradox Studios, and they were the ones who made Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks, and they all went on to Sony, and they were the ones that all made God of War. Fighting game players, why Kratos' throw reaches so far, because that was a Zangief player who designed the throw system. Shoutouts to Eric. But we knew that that is what we had to do. We had to quit eventually. So when you sit there and look at what a lot of players did in the past, that mindset definitely got in the way. Had we actually been in the position where we knew we could play this for a career, actually make money off of it, actually have someone win $1 million for playing Street Fighter, you would have a very different situation. I told the story, of course, before of the Mike Watson situation where he basically quit. He was just running Super Arcade. Someone talked shit to him in Street Fighter 4, and he was like, I am now going to learn Street Fighter 4 just to beat your ass. And he did. He learned Street Fighter 4 and started beating that player's ass, dude. Like, he just started whipping it. He chased him at every tournament. He followed him to tournaments just so he could beat him in tournaments. And he did. Because that's how good Mike Watson was at fighting games. And if he really wanted to learn fighting games right now, if he was willing to play a lot of these fighting games, he'd be able to do it again. He absolutely would. But the fact that we all knew we had to quit changed the way that we approach it. Now you have these people who can basically dedicate everything to it. You know, if Mena RD had won $250,000 back in our time, back in my time, and spent it on creating a game center for his friends to all play games and to create a team and fly his team out to events, we would have all thought he was stupid. We would have been like, what are you doing with your money? Like, invest this shit. Future, what are you doing? Now we're like, Mena RD, what a selfless man. He created a place where they could all play games. He's flying out his team. He started sponsoring players, blah, blah, blah. Like, Mena RD has the ability to focus on fighting games. You know, and so, like, here's the discussion then. So people are like, well, then why is Justin not entering tournaments? Why is Daigo not dominating like he used to, et cetera, et cetera? They've got different focuses now. They've got different focuses. I mean, Justin he's a family man. He's got a daughter. He's got a family. move to Canada for free healthcare. You know, he knows he has to have a steady source of income to be able to raise his family. Daigo knows he could make more money being a personality on content. That's what Eris did, right? Eris was like, holy crap, I'm making a lot more money streaming, so I'm gonna do this instead of play, right? It's just different focuses now. And like I said, that mindset when you actually have, oh, Justin actually talked about this, that's cool. When you had that mindset burned in your head, it's hard to shake that, honestly. Like, my joke often times is, you know, when I was playing video games a long time ago, my parents used to always yell at me and they'd be like, James, stop playing video games. Video games are gonna ruin your life. They're gonna ruin your life. And now that I'm, you know, verging on 50, looking at where I am, they were right. They were probably right, to be honest with you. I'm one of the only stupid people who was abstinent enough to stick in this kind of thing here and live a starving artist life at this point. Because if I was just still a programmer, I'd probably be happy right now with all this money and, you know, all these cool toys and stuff. But, you know, I mean, again, I knew, but see, the reason why my brain works that way is because that's what was programmed into me, is that we were supposed to leave this realm at some point in time, that we were supposed to get out, and that I am more in it than I ever was. I feel like I'm doing something backwards, so it's easy for me to make that joke, you know, that that video games have ruined my life. But, you know, honestly, you know, real talk, I mean, I'm in Street Fighter VI. I've been to Chile, I've been to Kuwait, I've been to France, I've been to Spain, I've been to Japan, I've been to, you know, also Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, you know, I've been in like the 30 different states in the, no, not 30, like 20, 25 states in the United States and stuff. So, you know, obviously this has been a very fulfilling and wonderful, you know, life that I've chosen to live. Certainly, there are hardships involved with it, but, you know, I want to do it. But again, that mentality was in my head. And again, the reason why I was not good at MVC2 and Third Strike is because those games came out when I graduated from college. And there was a high level of me just being like, you know what? I have to quit. And I just focused on work. CVS1 eventually kind of pulled me back in, and me and my friends played all the time, and then I just ended up going to Golfland all the time, and I just got involved again, and then Street Fighter 4 happened, and because like literally in 2008 Evo, which I've talked about a million times, I contemplated quitting fighting games after that. After 2008, I was like, you know what? Evo is smaller, it's not growing, maybe it's time for me to stop. Maybe it's time for me to quit. Because like I said, that was just something you did. Fortunately, Street Fighter 4 came out and blew up. I saw the launch party, and then Evo 2009 happened. And I remember literally sitting on a chair, and one of the old school photographers from Evo, Caraface, walked up to me and she was like, "Boy, you look exhausted," and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, "I can't quit now." I remember telling her, I was like, "I cannot quit now. I would be stupid if I quit now. Like, this is it. This is the goal right here. Like, this is, like, I have to keep doing this." If you do, Mike, let me know, because I would love to say hi as well. I mean, like I said, I had contemplated quitting in 2008 because that's what we did. You just knew you had to leave it eventually. And that's the difference between a lot of the old school and the new school players. Now, obviously, someone like Daigo can dedicate all of his resources to just playing and all this stuff. But like I said, content creation is a little more important. And, you know, there is, you know, sometimes you just kind of lose that drive a little because you find out different things are important to you, right? So like Justin, you know, family, when he lived with me, family was something that he talked about a lot. okay? He had always talked about getting married and having a kid because family was so, so important to him. And so the fact that he has his family and he's kind of cut back on the competition and he's focused on content creation makes total sense. That's always been something that's very important to him. You know, Daigo is probably, you know, found a lot of different things. I mean, he had the walking stream that he did, you know, like he's figured out like the content creation, the way to, you know, spread some positivity to people and stuff. You know, competition might just not be where his mind is all the time now. And, you know, when you see players that do have that mentality like Tokido, sure, Tokido doesn't win all the time, but he's still hella good and he's still really good. But, you know, we're still also talking about, you know, I've often talked about how a lot of the modern games are harder for, you know, the old school players because they were raised on a different mindset, which, you know, of course, this whole discussion was talking about a lot over here. Yeah, and Daigo quit the FGC for a few years. And you know what? He turned his competitive nature to Mahjong. He went down the path of Mahjong. That's where he met Bonchan. It's all in his book. You can read about all of this stuff. And it was only when Street Fighter 4 came back and they were doing that national tournament that he came back, basically. Yeah, they've got nothing left to prove on the competitive stage, right? They can do other things. You know, Daigo was running Kimono Michis and stuff like that. So again, you know, it's not a fair, it's just not a fair discussion point. To be like, well, yeah, look at these old school players. Daigo isn't so great anymore. So clearly the old school players aren't as good. Like, we have to understand what the mindsets are like that are going to be different. And, you know, honestly, 20 years from now, if we get to a point where fighting games are winning like $10 million, you know, it's going to be different there as well. If it stays about the same, you know, are the good players of today able to keep up with the future players of tomorrow? Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, there's no way a player like Punk or you know, like Kawano are going to become outclassed someday. Like, they're just really good. They're just really, really good, right? Yeah, and if you think about Mena, like I said, you win $250,000. Like, that's not, you didn't win $250,000 if you're from the Dominican Republic. $250,000 USD in the Dominican Republic is ridiculous, right? So there's no reason for him not to dedicate everything to this. There's no reason for him not to focus everything that he's got on this. And, you know, some players have said when they see him train, they're like, I've never seen anybody train like this in my life. Like, Mena RD goes hard into this. But again, that's a different mindset. You've already won $1 million. And then you won a lot more after that, you know, for your country's, you know, currency kind of thing. You know that this is a true path that you can go. The motivation, the desire, and the mentality is just so different. It's just so, so, so different, honestly. And so, you know, it's. I don't like the conversation of the old versus new. I don't like the arguments of old versus new, because we have different mindsets. I mean, the fact that Tokido won Evo 2002, and then won Evo 2017. 15 years late. No, he won Evo 2. I never remember the year for Evo UCLA year. Evo UCLA year was, that was, what year was that? Somebody help me here. I'm always so bad at figuring this out. It was 2000, wasn't it? Was it 2000? Shit. And of course, I'm so bad at my Google Foo that I can't figure out where it is. Okay, let's see here. Evo. Okay, the first one was 2002. Okay, 2002. Burn that in my memory. It's 2002. So the fact that Tokido actually won Evo in 2002, then came back to win in 2017, you know, is a big indication of how strong a player can remain if they are dedicated the way that they are dedicated. So again, I think, you know, Tokido is a great example of that. Obviously, we're in a position where everybody is so good now that it's hard to be consistent. You know, Mena RD is probably one of the closest to being consistent that we have. But again, like, he hasn't won everything. He certainly didn't win the Singapore and France offlines. And if you're going by those kind of events, like, Chris Wong might be the most consistent. You know, there's just no debate. There's just no debate. It's fun to talk about. I mean, we joked about the Jordan, Kobe, LeBron thing early on. It's fun for people to debate, but man, people with Jordan, LeBron, and Kobe really getting their feels about these about that topic. Holy crap. Holy crap. But, you know, that's just the way it is. We make these discussions, but, you know, to sit there and have people talk about old school players and saying they're washed up or, you know, clearly they're just not as good anymore. Dude, like I said, Tomo, I've seen Tomo play. And he was doing things that we have names for that we didn't have names for back then. He was something special. He was different. There was something about him that you could tell was very, very different. There's a lot about him and Knuckle Dude that I feel very similar about, the way they look, act, and play. And they both play Guile, now that I think about it, which is actually kind of funny. But again, I have no doubt that if Tomo were at that young age where he was the king of Street Fighter II right now, he would be able to take games off of Mena. He would be able to take games off of Knuckle Dew and everybody, but they would all be able to take games off of him. Like, back then, Tomo was nigh indestructible. That wouldn't be the case now, not even close. But I feel like it would be a very, very even kind of situation, because given the knowledge, given the training mode, given the ability to understand fighting games like we do, some of those players back then would just be ridiculous. Ridiculous. So, yeah, Quincy Owens, I did say that. I said that the Ryan Hart, Chris T discussion was highly, highly misinterpreted. And it was more about the fact that, you know, old games were harder to random somebody out. That wasn't why he was saying, like, you can't beat, you know, this person, you can't beat this person at third strike, blah, blah, blah. Had nothing to do with the old school versus new school players. That whole thing got blown out of proportion and went completely the wrong way. But it brought up this conversation, so that's why I'm addressing it. But I did say that early on, that is clearly not what Ryan Hart was trying to... Well, I didn't say, like, clearly, but I was saying it definitely got misconstrued. It definitely was interpreted incorrectly. So, but there you go. So, I don't think that there's a point in really discussing it, old versus new players. I think a good player is a good player. A good fighting game is a good fighting player. And you can see that too when they transition from game to game. A player who's good at one fighting game, usually if they want to play it, can be good at another fighting game. The same people winning Street Fighter V are the same people winning late Street Fighter V are the same people winning early Street Fighter VI. Shock! You know, it's just, if you're good, you're good. If you have that mindset, you have that mindset. And so I really do believe that a lot of the old school players would be as good as all the new school players are right now. But that's not saying that they'd be better. They'd be as good. And, you know, it would be cool if we could somehow get, like, a Tomo in his prime going up against a Mena in his prime and see what happens. But, you know, we'll never know. We'll never really, really know. So let's stop arguing about the old versus new, please. Please. There's just no point, dude. If you're good, you're good. If you're good, you're good. That's it. That's all it is. So, all right. Thank you guys for tuning in. For those of you on Twitch, we got one more thing to talk about here. But for those of you on YouTube, again, hope you appreciate the content. Please like and subscribe and comment below. Let me know what kind of things you'd like to see me discuss as well, if you've made it this far. I know everybody stops videos by the time they get to this point. But let me know in the comments what other topics you would like to hear me discuss and, you know, put my mature, take a look at everything more carefully point of view. Hope you guys enjoy that as well. So the day that this podcast graced your ears was the most important day of your life. But for me,
it was Tuesday.